This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. If we ever go to a Midday 180 show where we're filmed, Paul?
Yes.
The last break would have been on mute. As we welcome everyone back just like that. The final hour of the show is here. Alongside Paul Kuharsky, I'm Jonathan Hutton. David Reed is the chairman of the board. We are wide open this hour where you can join us. 615-737-1045, our number. Jonathan Schaefer, he's in studio as well. We have the cameras up and rolling. Paul, we welcome calls. We also welcome one more person that wants to join the Midday Mixer tonight, presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, home of Tennessee Whiskey, the original Tennessee Whiskey, and Bellmead Bourbon. Tonight, 8 p.m., one final spot for the Midday Mixer, off-the-record chat. The previous six that we've been a part of have been awesome, and this is a chance to chat with listeners. We love that, and it's a way that we can do that without, you know, going to a Preds playoff game or going to a Sounds matchup. We're doing what we can, and that's through Zoom. Many of you are using that anyway for office meetings. You can join us tonight at 8 o'clock. Flip the camera on and hang out.
Jump on, drink up, and tell some stories, give us some feedback, hear some stories, meet some of the people listening like you are. It's been a blast every time, and it'll be a blast tonight. That's our guarantee.
Coming up on Monday for Memorial Day, Titans throwback. 7 a.m. is when things kick off with Titans Radio's a recall of some of the best games from last season. It starts with the Chargers, which as we go through these, I'll say that was, when you think of the Titans Chargers from last year, that's Tannehill's first win as the starting quarterback. That's also the goal line stand. That's the defense making the play at the end where Tannehill gets his first victory. The Chiefs at home in Nashville, that was the most exciting home game of the year that ended on a blocked field goal attempt, and the Titans were able to kneel it out from there. Browns, fourth quarter blowout for the offseason champions, and that kicked off their season in week one. The Falcons will be played on Monday. I think of the Falcons, I think of that is Mariota's last great moment as the Titans starting quarterback. He had that first half where they put up 24 points. He connected with A.J. Brown. That was the first big splash with A.J. Brown. I believe he caught two touchdowns that day.
Corey Davis was good. They were both good.
Yeah, yeah. You saw the duo. The Patriots and the Ravens, of course, will be played on Monday. If you're recapping the Titans season from the positive moments, you got to finish with those two. The Patriots with the Titans taking down the defending champions. And, of course, that's Tom Brady's final game in Foxborough playing for New England. And then the Ravens, where Derrick Henry goes off and the Titans shut down the number one offense in the league and the MVP at quarterback in Lamar Jackson. But finishing off the entire day on Monday, Paul, at 7 o'clock p.m., Super Bowl I, Chiefs and Packers played on January 15th, 1967. They'll play the CBS broadcast in its entirety through Westwood One, which will be the first airing of that.
Interesting for football historians. That'll be really something.
Paul wishes we were recapping the Rolling Stones right now.
I do. I wish we were. Disappointing. And I could have had a new hat show print. Though I have to say my Rolling Stones hat show print did not come from that night. I did not know. And I don't know if they were selling them at that show. My wife found it at a silent auction when she was at some charity benefit and bought it later and surprised me with it as a very good gift.
What is the NFL proposing about the kickoff rules? I'm seeing this floated out through several of the national media reporters. The owners are going to vote next week on an onside kick alternative.
Yeah, it's this what we've heard about forever. Alternative to onside kick that would allow a team a chance to maintain possession for going for it on a 4th and 15 from their own 25-yard line. And that Tom Pelissero says it sounds like support for the idea is growing. I hate it. It's artificial. My proposal would be to let the kickoff stuff return to its old form in late game scenarios. I understand it's a dangerous scenario. There's some danger to football. But just this random fourth and 15 at a given time where you get possession, where you don't have possession,
yeah,
strikes me as just a completely random artificial thing. Rivers McCown, who covers the Texans some, I believe, says NFL teams faced third or fourth and 15 150 times, I believe that would be last year, and converted 22 of them. So I have to it'll take me a second to do the math there, but that doesn't sound like a I don't know how much better that conversion rate is than the conversion rate of the terrible onside kick rate that we saw.
Just getting word, we've got confirmation on a special guest for tonight's Zoom midday mixer. You will want to be in the room for this guest and his stories.
14.7%. That's certainly better than we saw at onside kick percentages. But still, I mean, I guess I should open up my mind to alternatives for safer football and just accept that it's going to evolve. But I hate inorganic created gimmicky stuff, and this is inorganic created gimmicky stuff.
Yes. And you want the late game situation like that for teams. And I, at least I do.
I also want the surprise situation. New Orleans largely won the Super Bowl over the Colts because of a surprise onside kick coming out of halftime. Now, you can't come out and raise your hand for a fourth and 15 chance coming out of halftime.
That's a great point. So
that surprise in that New Orleans Colts game can't happen in football today. You can't try that onside kick because the formation and everything limits the ability to pull off a successful surprise. And so Sean Payton would not call for that play in that game today. And the Colts probably win that Super Bowl.
I'm thinking of the other scenarios that takes out. You know, that takes out Malarkey opening up the game against Minnesota. Was it Minnesota where they went onside kick to begin the game? Week one?
Sorry. I'm terrible at remembering those scenarios. But he
they didn't
he
get did it.
Pull a surprise one that didn't happen. Could have been saved from it, maybe. But I think it's a dead play now. And so if you effectively kill the play, then it seems odd to me that years later you're looking for a way to replace the play that you killed. And so
it's that's right.
As an unintended consequence that you've eliminated the ability for a team to try to get back into a game late with this last chance effort that was always part of the game.
But on the flip side, you're not eliminating something that really goes down on a stat sheet for a player. You're not eliminating something that changes the fabric of the game, that changes the significance of a Hall of Fame player or not. It's just a rule that you take out that a year from now, if it's not there, will fans really miss it? I mean, that's the question you ask. You don't want them to add more rules to help out the quarterback in a passing league already, because that's going to inflate numbers even more. But if you take out an onside kick, is that change? I know it changes the game. It changes the potential outcome of a game, and it keeps the team in it, which is what owners love. They want that fourth quarter, one possession football game. TV networks want it too, and that's why they pay so much for the league, because it's that exciting. And normally it's a one possession game in the fourth quarter. But beyond that, it doesn't for those in like the baseball crowd that don't want to change rules because of the way things are recorded historically, it doesn't really change anything.
I get what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is if you score on me and now I'm in desperation, I still have a kickoff. Like, the nature of the game is I get a kickoff. So if I do something tricky with the kickoff, that's still in the natural flow of the game.
Yeah.
It's unnatural for me to have an offensive play. And it's completely unnatural for it to be fourth down.
Coming up, let's look a layer or two deeper at the Titans' schedule, specifically for their MVP of the playoffs last season, Derrick Henry. We had Eddie George on yesterday, who was adamant about Henry being the lifeblood of the team, being the difference between wins and losses. For the last 2 years, Henry has been the guy the Titans have relied on to carry them through the playoff push. As we look ahead, does the schedule set up in his favor this coming year on paper? We'll tell you yes or no next. Midday 180, queued up by Evely's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. We're going to talk Derrick Henry in a moment. Paul, you're watching the Brady preview. There's a docuseries coming out on Tom Brady next year, a 9-part series going through the 9 Super Bowl seasons, I believe. The only difference between he and Jordan's series happened, 20 years after the fact. Brady's is still happening in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, also this is kind of self-produced, right? I saw a good tweet from Pro Football Talk, who I'm loath to credit too often, but they said something along the lines of, trying to find it really, if a third world dictator produced a documentary on the life of said third world dictator, we'd laugh out loud. When an athlete does it, we lap it up. Which I thought was a pretty...
Yeah, because he's an athlete and he's not a dictator. Yeah. I mean, that's not that hard to understand. People want to be entertained, and it's entertaining. Just like NFL Films is entertaining. They're employed by the NFL.
I don't know. The little bit he showed about his personal growth, it seems interesting. I don't think it's 10 hours long.
I mean, the man open mouth kissed his son on Facebook Watch. There's no telling what he'll show on this.
Very self-controlled. I didn't see the tweet. I didn't save the tweet yesterday as a great Robert Parrish standing up to Jordan yesterday. I was mocking Chad about how he would hate it because it showed somebody standing up to Jordan, the almighty Jordan. In Chad's eyes, with Robert Parrish, who I forgot was ever on the Bulls. Do you remember that? That was weird.
No.
To me. He was on the Bulls and he was on Charlotte after his Celtics time. But it sounded like he stood up to him verbally in a way that was beyond Steve Kerr's punch that I liked. Anyway, we'll
did
see.
Did he throw a fist? Because if not, it's not beyond Steve Kerr's punch.
He did not throw a fist. But
if it's all talk, then he's like many people who have talked trash to Jordan, to me.
Well, I don't think he's like many people in that he won several championships himself, so he had some pedigree that other people didn't have who were on that team who were reliant.
Matt Johnson won championships himself and was bowing down to Jordan on this documentary.
Yeah, well, he was never a teammate of Jordan's who was
the dream team he was, where they went at
with him in practices on a regular basis. Dream team, I would say, is a different circumstance. I'll have to find this. We'll reopen a conversation after I dig it back up.
The fact that Steve Kerr threw a punch at Jordan, I love that guy even more.
Me too. Because, but I love him even more because I think most of those people cowered in the face of Jordan. And a lot of them had to. I mean, they just weren't equipped to handle him in those settings.
Yeah.
Like we discussed, there were plenty of other great, great players, not the greatest of all time, but great, great players who, ran practices and ran teams, in successful teams in different ways, championship teams, Bird and Magic amongst them. Have a couple rule changes here that NFL is considering now and put them out. These aren't rule changes, but rules proposals, club playing rules proposals. The two that jump out to me here And I don't presume they'll get much wind in their sails. They're not popular talk among the media who are covering these things more closely. Baltimore and the Los Angeles Chargers ask for an amendment that adds a booth umpire as the eighth game official to the officiating crew. And Baltimore and Los Angeles Chargers ask for a senior technology advisor to the referee to assist the officiating crew. So I would guess this senior technology advisor would perhaps be helping this booth umpire communicate with the referee. I don't see why there wouldn't be a groundswell of support for this. This would solve many of the problems. The pass interference rule has completely gone away. I mean, it's not even, you know, it was a one-year thing, but it's not even up for any further discussion like amendments or corrections or anything like that. It's just disappeared.
I mean, to be fair, if you're not going to enforce it in the year you're going to try it out, then why even bring it back?
No, it's an absolute joke.
It's a Band-Aid to keep Sean Payton from running his mouth for a year.
Yeah, basically. That was a disaster. And quite frankly, it kind of now if they put new rules on the books, we're all going to doubt them until we see it. Right. They put a new rule on the books right now. We're going to say, yeah, that sounds good. Let's see now if they actually enforce it. Which another unintended consequence of that disaster.
You know, the other thing we haven't heard a lot about.
A booth umpire. Who would object?
No one.
It's not going to pass, is it?
I think it might. There's been talk about the eye in the sky referee for a while.
I think it's going to take more time. I don't know. I think there's a hesitancy largely because of this idea that there is New York control or some unseen whispering, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That they'll think that odds makers or bettors or some controlling force, Goodell, you know, wants the Patriots to win this one and is whispering in the ear all of these conspiracy theories that go out of control. This will send them spinning like an out of control helicopter.
The other thing the pass interference rule not being enforced. The other thing we haven't talked about in, I don't know, two years, whenever this was implemented, leading with the crown of the helmet as a running back on the goal line or offensive lineman exploding off the line of scrimmage or whatever it might be. You cannot hit your opponent with the helmet first, right? Face mask or anything. We haven't seen a flag for that.
The crown of the helmet, I think they'd say they officiated it out of the game. Nobody puts their head down.
Oh, that's just
and
not
I can't
true.
Say
everybody
can't,
puts their head down to, especially if, on the goal line,
to hit with the top of their helmet. I would say I haven't seen that much. But you're right about initiating with the helmet.
Yeah,
I think there's plenty of initiating with the face of the helmet, with the forehead, or the face mask. I think it's inevitable. I think it's unpreventable.
I'm sure some guys adapt to it, but there are plays in the game where you're driving off the line of scrimmage where you're going to hit with your helmet first because there's so little space to gain before you either get a first down or you get a touchdown. It just happens.
Yeah.
Or on field goal attempts.
And they just don't particularly care. It's a selective enforcement rule book in many ways.
Yeah.
And it's part of what infuriates fans about the game. And where the game loses credibility, and you go back to Mark Cuban's quote, which is what? It's got to be over 5 years old now. It could be 8 or 10 years old now. It's at least 5 years old now about, the league, it's become too big and too self-important and all of that stuff. And it's going to come back to bite it in the ass pretty much is what he said. And on this kind of stuff, every year he seems a little bit more right and a little bit more like a prophet.
And yet the TV contracts are up and across the entire country at any level, all people talk about returning is football. Is football going to be played? We're not talking about the NBA the way we are talking about football.
No, absolutely not.
I'm not talking about NFL. It's every level.
But this is the kind of thing, don't you agree, Hutt, that in another 5 or 10 years when this is the kind of thing that builds up, right? And so at a certain period of time where there's some other sort of crisis, this will hurt them. It doesn't hurt them now. The TV ratings are still good, all of that stuff. And it almost sometimes helps them, all of this debate about rules stuff. I said at one point, you know, the NFL needed another huge controversy like Deflategate or whatever during an off season when things were quiet, because people weren't talking about the league. But at some point, all of it becomes such a big stack that then one card comes out and the whole thing comes crashing down. I'm not saying the league comes crashing down, but I'm saying at some point this will hurt them in an unforeseen way because they let it stack up too long and people really are sick of the officiating and stuff. The league continues to be successful despite it, not because of it.
Well, it's not going to keep them down though, or hold them back. I see it differently. This whole pandemic has opened my eyes to the fact that just the number of people and the number of leagues at every level that rely on football to fund whatever they're doing, whether that's travel or whether that's NCAA athletic department or a high school's athletic department. Football is king because of the money manufactured from the sport itself. And that's been no more evident to me than right now when, oh, we can cancel spring sports, but you better believe football is going to be played in the fall. They're going to find a way to kick off because that's how they're going to fund the next year's spring sports. And at the high school level, TSSAA, the stories are that they can't go a full calendar year without football monetarily because the cheerleading squad or the baseball team that needs new uniforms get that money from the concession stand at a high school football game. It's too important to go away.
Well, this is ties back into what Reed said in a different way, but like in Nashville being in Nashville being over-reliant on music and tourism, sports is over-reliant on football. And if something happens to football, we're in trouble. The same way Nashville's in trouble if something extended happens to tourism and music. And maybe somebody out there is considering this in a way, I don't know how. We're not going to fix it right now, and we're not going to create the contingency plan right now. But if there comes a time where America loses its confidence in football over the officiating, if there comes a time, and I know you were dismissive of this last week based on your premise, which is a good one, that the concussions hurt the incoming population of football players to a degree that a segment of the population is less interested in the people who are playing football. If these things come to pass mm-hmm. on a longer time frame than we've talked about at some times, who's making the contingency plan for the very things that you're talking about, for football being the financial engine of sports? We should write that down and do an hour on
it. Yeah, I mean,
a day of it.
Well, there's a bigger topic to be had, and even from the health and safety of the league stance or any football level. For all the discussion we had about how concussions are going to kill the game, if they don't have the game, the lack of football is going to kill athletic departments.
It's
not even the sport itself, Paul. It's the payday games. We got into that yesterday with Doug. You know, what's UMass going to do without the $2 million for the $10 million budget that they're going to get for playing one football game right against a Power 5 school?
And I've long maintained there's got to be a better solution than that. There's got to be a better solution than UMass going to Auburn or wherever as a sacrificial lamb in order to get the money it needs to function in an athletic program. There's got to be a better way.
And then the non-Power 5 saying, please let us play more out-of-conference games and reduce the conference games. So for all the discussion about, the sacrificial lamb's going to, you know, put their health and safety at risk, the lower-level schools going to play Michigan and Tennessee and SEC schools, now they're wanting more of those now because those are the games where they can actually get money. They're not going to make any money at the gate when MTSU hosts Marshall. That's and they're right.
Yeah,
they
we've
have
got
to play those games.
We've got to come up with a plan to fix that.
Midday 180.
And some of it's some kind of collegiate revenue sharing.
This is 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, three locations, 12 South, Sylvan Park in East Nashville. They'll reopen the East Nashville location Monday, June 1st. If you're interested in working with Edley's Barbecue, they are now hiring at all three locations, focusing first on the East location. Edley'sBBQ.com/jobs is the website, or you can apply in person at the Sylvan Park Edley's. Tomorrow, Nashville-style hot pork all day with Edley's. David Reed just got really hungry. Paul, looking at Derrick Henry and the work he puts in November and December when it starts to grind on defenses as the trends of the league go towards the run game. We saw that in the playoffs as well. We're seeing that in the AFC South. So for this case, we put January in there too. But for the sake of the Titans schedule, just looking at the final 8 weeks of the season, starting with the Thursday night game against Indy, at Baltimore and at Indy, Henry averaged 5.6 yards per carry against the Colts last season in the two games combined. He ran for 149 yards in the game on the road last year in December. He also ran all over Baltimore in the playoffs. Both matchups are not going to be easy by any means. The Colts have added DeForest Buckner. The Ravens traded for Calais Campbell. They drafted Matt Ebuike and Patrick Queen. They return a strong defense, as do the Colts. Both allowed less than 100 yards rushing per game on average last year. But those three games with Indy and Baltimore then lead to the home stretch and the playoff push. Home against Cleveland, the Browns defense gave up yards on the ground a year ago, but they should be somewhat improved. Final four games at Jacksonville, a team the Titans offensive front and Henry own mentally and physically. That's week 14. That's usually quitting time for the Jacksonville Jaguars on the schedule in years past. Week 15, home against the Lions. They allowed over 115 yards per game on the ground a year ago, and their defensive front is just a mess. Week 16 at Green Bay, you would think everyone would like Henry and the Titans' hard-nosed mentality paired with the cold weather elements of Lambeau Field. The Packers have a great pass rush, not so much run defense in Green Bay based on what we've seen. Week 17 at Houston, 121 yards per game on the ground last year is what they allowed as a Houston defense. They've drafted Ross Blacklock. But beyond that, Titans certainly hope it's not a Week 17 win-and-in scenario. They hope they already have that solidified that they're in. But when you look at the way the schedule progresses towards the end of the year, even though they're going on the road, it still sets up pretty well for a team based on the run, I think.
I think you're right on that. The thing that you're hoping here is that Henry, after his big carry season, what did he have, 303 before the playoffs, is not any kind of downturn or injury for him. Because historically, a season after the big carry total is when you see things start to change. So you hope he's an exception to that. And that the final four games, the final five games of a season, nothing's gone wrong for him. And that he's gotten you there. That's the big question, I think, in my mind and in running back naysayer minds.
In the playoffs last year, he had 83 carries. And
so that's 386. And then if you put in, I'm sure he had enough to get him over 400 in terms of touches. And
right,
that's a dangerous number, right?
For his career, 804 carries, 3,833 yards. So
how many was that for career?
I'm looking at Pro Football Reference, 804 carries, 3,833 yards.
So yeah, half of his carries, roughly,
Yeah, and all the majority of the carries are in the last 2 years. He had 215 carries in 2018 with a good or a a decent Deion Lewis, a Deion Lewis that was involved in the game plan. And that was also a year where he didn't really take off until that New England game, and then that was the turn for when he became the guy. But in 2019, you're right, 303 carries, 215 in 18, and then 176 in 2017, and 2016, 110 carries.
And then you add in the playoffs. It was a big year last year, obviously, for him. And listen, Mike Vrabel's made it clear. As long as he's around, they're gonna ride him. And I've always maintained this. I don't want them. The reason that they're going to it's going to appear that they're doing any kind of load management, if you will, to steal the NBA's term, is Darrington Evans, not Derrick Henry. It's going to be about third down and what they want their running back to do on third down. It's not going to be about limiting Derrick Henry in terms of what they do. They're going to ride Derrick Henry all they can. And I've always said this. Worry about next year, next year. Worry about now, now. Now is Derrick Henry's time to take the ball and do everything he can.
Well,
and you can't
we'll
worry
see them.
About 2021 in 2020 in terms of your running back's workload. Especially with him on a one-year contract. But even if he signs a long-term contract. Especially if he even if he signs a long-term contract. You got to give him the ball as much as need be right now, today, this Sunday. And you worry about next Sunday, and on and on.
Coming up, there is a new podcast that's debuting that will put this show at conflict. Because we once had an opinion that was much different than, I think, the current opinion. Maybe not. But it's this person with the guest combined that Paul will hate. Sports related. Midday when Eddie queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.
Edley's Barbecue is excited to announce they're planning to open their East Nashville location on Monday, June 1st. It's been tough to get through tornado damage and the pandemic, but they're getting back into the swing of things at their East Nashville location very soon. Edley's is actively hiring for this location as well as their other spots. If you're interested in joining the Edley's Barbecue family, Will and Catherine, the owners, awesome. Visit edleysbbq.com/jobs or visit their Sylvan Park location this week to apply in person. Well-
Wrapping up the Thursday edition, Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Thanks to all who joined us. The Hall of Fame day. We had Bill Polian on the show earlier, David Poyle with some great insight on the return to play for the NHL and the plan or plans that they're waiting on and what's been proposed. That detailed conversation will be posted online, midday180.com for Midday 180 Audio on Demand, 1045thezone.com or wherever you download your podcast. There's another great hour earlier in the show with Coach Mack and Kirby Allen Kirby. David Reed, the chairman of the board, this is not the final segment for him. Reed, in honor of you sticking around and making the show happen for 3HL, I present to you my favorite movie and clip that we reference on the show.
You know what? I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving.
I'm not leaving! The show goes on!
Yes, it does.
That may be just what I needed. I was hitting.
Did that give you a little energy?
I was hitting the 2 o'clock low there.
Give you a little energy. That gives me energy, Paul. You look exactly. You were expressionless as that played. I get fired up listening and thinking about that scene.
I've heard it a few times.
So have I. Hey, yeah. One thing you will not hear a few times will be the new podcast from Ray Lewis. It's entitled, as I pull it up here, Everyday Greatness is the name of the podcast. Now, I mentioned before the break that we would be conflicted as a show because Pissed Off for Greatness is one of the themes, and it comes from Ray Lewis in one of his speeches that was nonsensical in the locker room for the Baltimore Ravens. But sitting down with him one-on-one, as we did at Eddie George's Cigars, Cocktails, and Conversation at Arrington Vineyards, it's a much different vibe with the interview than what we expected. So before I tell you his first guest, just on the surface, Ray Lewis podcast, would it intrigue you to click play?
No, only to have cut-ups for David Reed to use. That maybe would.
Can we get access to a 24-hour channel to that podcast?
Yeah, we could play it opposite the Andrew Luck book club. What was his other one? Everything is everything, or nothing is everything, or
no,
nothing
was,
is nothing.
That was Kevin Garnett, I think, after he won the NBA title.
No, everything is that was everything is possible. But no, there's a lot of nonsensical stuff that Ray Lewis says, like a filibuster.
Yes.
He would be a spectacular filibusterer. And I'm not one to listen to filibusters. So
he did tell us some great stories.
It was a lovely interview. He did Andy a solid, and we had a quality interview, and I would be happy to interview him again.
Okay.
But I don't want to listen to him, him be in your seat. I'd like him to be in the guest seat.
Got you. Well, the guest seat is taken, though, because his first guest with the new podcast that launches tomorrow called Everyday Greatness is with Deion Sanders.
Oh, God. You know how they play like loud death metal music in Guantanamo Bay? Like, remember those scenes at the beginning of Zero Dark Thirty? Okay. If those guys speak English, the prisoners, and I think some of them do, if you could put Deion Sanders and Ray Lewis on a high volume and have them listen to this, particularly Deion's fake laughter, but both of them will be laughing at their stories. I think if you alternated that with the death metal, confessions would come a-flying.
Are you saying that Deion Sanders is a war crime?
You can torture prisoners with that, don't you think? That would be awful.
You could torture me with it. You know who will be listening, though? Deion Sanders Jr. You know how he'll be listening?
And yes, I do have my feet up. My feet are up right now as we're talking, and I got actually 10 chains on worth probably $50,000 each.
He'll be listening in luxury. As far as he's concerned, he's part of that podcast because he thinks he's his dad.
Reed, hit that one where he does run his dad's Twitter account. Remember, he was telling us that it was him tweeting and not his father. But then we clearly figured out it was.
This guy thinks he's his dad more than some of these Titans crazies think that Taylor Lewan's their dad.
We at some point, we need to revisit the interview with Deion Sanders Jr.
Yes.
Because the questions that Paul was posing his way, like, how does it feel to ride on your daddy's coattails? And he gave play the answer. Play the answer one more time.
And yes, I do have my feet up. My feet are up right now as we're talking, and I got actually 10 chains on worth probably $50,000 each.
I think one of the things that needs to be revisited for people who never heard it, he thinks he is on the cutting edge because he's running a T-shirt company which prints on demand, so he doesn't have any overhead. Like, he thinks that is such an original idea, and he's the only one out there doing this.
It was tremendous.
Only one who's Deion Sanders' kid. He's got
that. To his credit, like, behind the scenes, he'll respond to us like a normal text chain. He'll be like, yeah, you want me on? What time I'm coming on? Like, it's not hard to get him on the show for a debate.
It's not hard because he's not busy.
And also, Paul,
sit with his feet up, working those neck muscles to hold up those chains.
The other thing we know is that a lot of the Titans players were listening to that because at the time, Logan Ryan came in like the day after and told us that he had heard it. And a lot of the teammates were discussing it and thought it was hilarious.
I'd be up for playing that back where we're pausing it and breaking it down.
Yes.
I've always wanted to pause and break down an interview after the fact. That could be the test case for that.
Absolutely.
That guy's a classic.
I forgot where we actually went with the whole chat because it was more about how absurd it was that he was running his son's account or his dad's account. And we were we tied it into Deion not knowing who Kevin Byard was.
Yeah, we said, do you not know who he is, or does your dad not know who he is, or do both of you not know who he is?
Deion Sanders Jr. He's on Midday 180. Deion Sanders is on the podcast with Ray Lewis, and I think from time to time we will check in on the 24-hour feed.
I think we should assign, you know, these listeners that we've had on as as guests, we should assign one of them to listen to it and then deliver us a report, like Davey. I would love to hear have Davey listen to that and come back to us with the highlights of it.
Oh,
it could be so like Wolfie for Howard Stern, who goes out to crazier stuff than that and then comes back, or Shuley.
I love it. And we'll, I think Reed's giving the thumbs up. We will have a 24-hour channel installed for Midday 180 where we can just check in from time to time on how that podcast is going.
Ray Lewis is the conductor of a podcast. It's just a disaster waiting to happen.
Some of the stories are great, but the speeches, nah.
There's going to be some speeches, Jim.
We're back at it tomorrow. Tonight, Midday Mixer, presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. DM us for a last-second chance to get in the room, and then we're closing the door, locking the door behind us. We hold the key, DM, to get in. We're back at it tomorrow. Midday when they queued up by Italy's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Don't block the box. Do, please, please, lock the locks.
Same.